when there's a cyclone or or disaster, after 2 to 3 days, people with disabilities hardly find, find money and even food to eat. It was hard for them. So I really wanted to the government to, if they could collect this aggregated data so that we know different basic needs that people with disabilities had.
Welcome to Enabling Commons, a place for conversations with activists, experts, and scholars at the intersections of disability and climate change. The podcast is produced by the Disability Inclusive Climate Action Research Program based at McGill University. I'm your host, Anya Kelly Costello. Today, I talk to Nellie Caleb, National Coordinator of the Vanuatu Disability Promotion and Advocacy Association. Nellie knows the compounding impacts of disasters intimately because in Vanuatu, they don't stop. We talk about what Nellie's learned from recent cyclones and years of advocacy in disaster risk response, covering everything from gathering timely data to evacuation center accessibility and housing insecurity. A quick note that the interview audio is patchy in places. There is a link to the transcript in the show notes. Now, here's our conversation. I'm talking with Nellie Caleb. It's great to have you here on Enabling Commons. Welcome, Nellie. Could you introduce yourself for us, please?
My name is Nellie Caleb. I'm the National Coordinator of the Vanuatu Disability Promotion and Advocacy Association, or FDPA for short. FDPA is the only national umbrella organization of people with disabilities in Vanuatu. It has 32 local organizations of persons with disabilities in six provinces across Vanuatu. We are a self-help organization. We do not have any co-funding, but our mandate is to advocate for rights and promote abilities for people with disabilities. Our vision is to work towards an inclusive an accessible Vanuatu where all individuals with disabilities who can participate and empowered and participate fully on an equal basis with others. So our office is in Lukianville Santo in the second town of Vanuatu. Thank you.
Thank you, Nellie. That's great to hear about the Vanuatu Disability Promotion and Advocacy Association. I just wanted to ask a little bit more about that. So what advocacy areas are some of the things that you're focusing on, and what strategies are you kind of using to do that advocacy?
Okay, we do, thank you. We do individual advocacy. We do self-advocacy. We do systemic advocacy. We advocate in different levels: community, province, national, international, regional. Our advocacy mainly on the rights of people with disabilities, and also we are advocating both for disability inclusion in all policies, programs of and plans for government, and also stakeholders and even the private sectors, CEOs, to make sure the plans and policies are inclusive, even the laws as well. We have 301 laws, and 101 laws are not compliant to the CRPD. So our advocacy is on the changes of laws that needs to be changed to be in line with the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities.
Advocating across that huge range of stakeholders and across so many different issues, right, that it almost feels like overwhelming to go through them as the CRPD covers, as you mentioned. Mm. So I know that one of the things, of course, being in the Pacific, that is really up there in terms of advocacy priorities is climate change. So I wondered just to paint a picture, and particularly for listeners who are not, not familiar with the Pacific kind of context, could you kind of describe some of the realities of climate change for people with disabilities in Vanuatu?
Pacific is is prone to natural disasters, and particularly Vanuatu. Vanuatu has all the hazards. I always tell my friend, colleague, that if you want to, if you want to experience some of the hazards like volcano, or earthquake, or cyclone, come to Vanuatu. We have all of them. But like in Vanuatu, the National Disaster Management Office and also the Vanuatu Meteorological and Geohazards Department has come up to say that Vanuatu is receiving 7 to 8 disaster every week in different areas in Vanuatu. So that means that we are having a volcano here, volcano heavy asphalt here. Then in other parts, they are having there's La Nina on the other part of Vanuatu, and there's really damages. And it's really hard for them to, for instance, I think before last week, we had these two cyclones. This is Judy and this is Kevin on the same week.
TC is a tropical cyclone.
And it's like category 4 and mm-hmm. category 3. And at the same time, we have a big earthquake too happening mm-hmm. on that day as well. So we are having a lot of disasters in Vanuatu.
The intensity of Cyclone Judy and Cyclone Kevin and an earthquake all happening within 72 hours is just unimaginable to me.
And but, I think I really want to just highlight when you're saying there, like the compounding effects of all of them, right? Because it's not like you get to recover properly from one of them before the next one comes along. So I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that, like living in that, with such a high level of uncertainty and instability, like what is that looking like for people with disabilities that your organization's working with?
For people with disabilities, they face a lot of challenges at the moment. At the moment, Vanuatu has a state of emergency for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And because the first before, there's a state of emergency for two provinces across Vanuatu. But now they found out that the damages or the disaster reaches all the islands in Vanuatu. Mm-hmm. So some were impacted by the ocean or the high tides and destroys their homes, some by, strong winds. They are really in the center of that cyclone and mm-hmm. they face a lot of challenges. And we thought of people with disabilities. They are really, really, really marginalized at this time. Just this week on Monday, our members with other gender protection cluster and other clusters deployed to some of the islands in the southern province and even in Sheva province as well. They did a rapid assessment.
Mm-hmm. When disabled people are losing their housing, or maybe they're being displaced from their normal sources of livelihood, like what's actually happening on the ground for disabled people? If would you be able to give some examples of that?
Well, at the moment, we do not have any. We still do not have any funds to do our assessment to our members, but. I have contacted our partner office in Villa, which is Vanuatu site for people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. They will do a quick data validation in some of the affected areas. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, with the experience that we had with DC Harold in 2020, it's a category 5 cyclone. Mm-hmm. Like we did a data validation and we found out that many members with disabilities have lost their houses, like they are totally damaged. Even some had to, evacuate to their family members, but their family members did not treat them properly. Sometimes they, for example, they eat once a day, or sometimes they give them very little food. And Sometimes they even chase them out from their homes, that they do not have the food or enough shelter to, you know. So it's really hard for our members. But then we had some partners like Vanuatu Skills Partnership. I'd rather came up to look at our list, our reports, the assessment report, and started building houses for some of our members who are really, you know, are really marginalized. Their homes were blown away, and even they don't know where to live because they don't have family members. They have to go and live with the other families in another island, and it's not safe. They managed to build houses for our members, and now they are very good houses, but you know, we never know. But yeah, I think one thing was good there is data collection. During this year, like Sanma province, where my office is really damaged by this year, and we did a data collection in Sanma and also part of Panama province and even part of Malamba, and all our members are not left out because they have, you know, they have received relief supplies and also the non-food items and even food too. We distributed food to them, so it
So
was,
you have a
you know,
good like a database showing like these are your
that's
members, this is
right.
where they live, and this is how you get the
Yes,
supplies.
and it was good because different people have different needs. Like one size doesn't fit all. When we do the assessment or we do the data validation, we ask them questions. Okay, they told us that they need this. So after the data validation, we have took the list. Okay, we looked at which one needs this, really needs this item, or really needs a house. That's when we give them. Like it means that we cannot give all the buckets to all the members, but when we do the data, we found out that some didn't need a bucket, or didn't need any this, or didn't need any, you know, their needs were, you know, were met after the data validation.
So the data validation is a way of contacting every member that your association would sort of deploy to do and really asking them what is it that you need.
Yes. And
Great.
even we do snowballing,
Okay.
and we found out that many who had not come and registered their names. And also, one good thing is they know that we are giving out, you know, NFIs
So that's relief supplies, which are non-food items.
and also the food to people with disabilities. So they just came and surrendered that, oh, I have a child with a disability, or I have an elderly, so which is really good.
Yeah. So just to explain snowballing for people who might not know that term, so is that basically that, you know, you would reach out to members, but then you would also encourage them to help you reach more people. Is that how that works?
Yes, in our first data validation, it's like they. I think because of the attitudinal barriers, parents doesn't want to, you know, take their babies out or even their family members to tell them we have a member here. But when our volunteers started giving out items and even food supplies to the members, so they could see the importance of the data validation, so they just come with their babies, they come with their, you know, their member to say, oh, we have one here. It really updates our registration.
That's really good insight, I think, into reaching people who, because of cultural attitudes and
Yes.
other barriers, perhaps to not feeling like they want to ask for help. Maybe showing them, okay, this is what we're able to tangibly do for you. I also just wanted to touch there on some of the intersections for people with disabilities who are women or minority genders as well. How the effects of climate change might be playing out for them as well.
Yes, they took the women with disabilities face a lot of barrier. Like they are not strong, and they don't have that, you know, some are single mothers with a disability. They really find it difficult to, you know, put food on the table at the end of the day. And it was really hard for them. And as I've mentioned, I'm talking about the experiences from last Isiharol. You know, there's two crises that took place at the same time. There's COVID-19 and also the Isiharol Category 5. And most of the women, like, when they have very little food, they just give it to their children and even their husband, and they don't have any left. They sometimes they just sleep at night without food because they want to make sure that their family eat. And most of women or women with disabilities who have had some jobs in some of the, you know, some of the services in towns, and when this COVID comes, it really gives them a big challenge because nobody to put food on the table. And it was really hard. Even those who look after their mom who had, you know, who had diabetes. And it's really hard for them to put food on the table and also to, you know, buy dignity kits for their mother. And it was so difficult. I remember one night when I was sleeping at the middle of the night, I could hear one baby crying. Like, he's 2 years old. He cried a lot, so I had to take my thoughts and walk to their house and ask, "Well, why is this baby crying too much?" And they said, "She's hungry because we ate like two bananas. Two small bananas each, and she was not satisfied." And mom tried to tell her that they don't have food, but she insisted, and she cried, she wanted to eat. And so I had to come back and get some food from the kitchen to go and give it to that baby to stop crying. But otherwise, it's really hard. Like what I've mentioned is sometimes some had 2 meals a day. Sometimes they have 1 meal. Yeah. So it's really hard for our women with disabilities, you know?
Yeah.
But some, their homes were destroyed. I remember one with, one is a member of Little People. She has their own home. And then when the cyclone came, hits the house, damages the house. And she came a couple of times in the office to say, "Please, can you find someone to build a house for me? Because my sister-in-law is like chasing me away every time, because he said I need to go and rebuild my house and stay there. There are many people in that home." So she cried a lot, but at the end we spoke to ATRA. It's an INGO, Seventh-day Adventist organization, and they managed to build her a home. So she went and stayed.
Thank you for sharing those experiences, and I think it shows really powerfully how you know, disasters without adequate relief funding lead to food insecurity for people very immediately, very tangibly. And I just wanted to pick up on there, what would it be that you would be advocating for the Vanuatu government and perhaps also to donors or, you know, to be funding in order to alleviate a lot of these barriers, and perhaps in the sort of, you know, prevention area as well?
I think what we did last time is to advocate to the government to tell them, please save our members first, like our people with disabilities with food first before save others, or even the elderly, save them first. People with disabilities and other vulnerable groups, give them food, water before you save others. But what I wanted to say to the government, if they can come up with a social protection scheme in place or a mechanism in place so that our members won't go hungry when there is you know, there's a crisis like this, because they will have money. Like most times we found out that when there's a cyclone or disaster, after 2 to 3 days, people with disabilities hardly find, you know, find money and even food to eat. It was hard for them. So I really wanted the government to maybe do a disability disaggregated data to the whole of Vanuatu. If they could collect disaggregated data so that we know different basic needs that people with disabilities had, and also to know how many people with disabilities live in Vanuatu, and to make sure that there's a social protection mechanism in place or social welfare benefits in place, so that it goes to people with disabilities who are really, they do not have any work, or they are unemployed, or even they are really, really marginalized in a way that they cannot find a job. So these social welfare benefits can go to them, so that even if there's any disaster, but they still can survive. They still had money, or they still had cash voucher to go and, find foods for them in the shop or in the market.
Yeah, because I'm hearing at the moment, so Vanuatu Disability Promotion and Advocacy Association is able, by the sounds of it, to give some supplies and meet some needs, but it sounds like you don't have the sufficient funding to meet all of the need out there, right? And that the government needs to be providing a lot more in the form of social protection.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about is I think, your organization was really critical to making sure that one of Vanuatu's core climate policies, called the Enhanced Nationally Determined Contribution, meaningfully includes people with disabilities. Because that policy has got a commitment to mainstream the rights of persons with disabilities.
Well, I would say it's really compliant, the climate change and disaster risk reduction policy. And the paper itself is really compliant to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, but very little has been done. Even we started our advocacy way back in 2015 on inclusion of people with disabilities. I remember shouting in different cluster meetings in Port Vila to talk about the inclusion of people with disabilities. But then we had an assessment. There we have a survey, and we had the findings. We send them out to all the government, the government responsibility, and even the NGOs, INGOs. And we could see the difference in 2018 when we have this, the Oxfam, which did the cash transfer program, and even during the heavy asphalt from the Ambae volcano, and they have to evacuate. And that's when we saw changes, but not too much. But when DC Harold hits in 2020, we could see that there's changes going, like there's inclusion of people with disabilities. But it takes time. We cannot sleep overnight and say, oh, there's changes. No, it takes time. For example, we have raised concern about, people had to travel with their assistive device or their personal assistance. But in 2018 and even 2018, the members with high support needs were chartered, like they chartered their plane to fly to Santo. They were traveled to run away from the heavy asphalt by a volcano, but they left their old wheelchairs and their personal assistance behind, saying that they're blocking the space, cargo space. So when they reach Santa, they find it very difficult to, help each other. So I had to go and tell the people at the emergency operations center to make sure, send the personal assistant and the assistive device to come today, because they're not enjoying the rights as anyone else. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that's terrible. And I just wanted to come back because, that was a good example of how policy change over time can start to lead to changes, but not lead to as much changes as you want, right?
When there's any disaster, any activity, we just advocate for VDPA and its members to be part of the, any activity. Before last year, they included us in the DRR Day.
That's Disaster Risk Reduction Day.
they want people to with disabilities to participate. But actually, in some other, you know, some of the activities, they exclude people with disabilities. But we always knock on their doors to say, hey, don't forget us.
At this point in our conversation, Nelly had to leave, and we picked up where we left off on another day. This time, the audio quality is not as good, and Nelly is feeling under the weather, but she shares crucial insights for governments and everyone working in disaster risk management and response. We start off talking about the need for disability-inclusive policy.
The government or donors or partners to make sure that they include people with disabilities and their organization in the design, implementation, and recovery rehabilitation.
In some provinces in Vanuatu, rapid response efforts are still leaving people with disabilities behind.
I saw the report yesterday that the distributions went to the communities in different, you know, in different areas, but they didn't even mention if people with disabilities were given some of the, you know, the curtains of water. They didn't even mention anything. The report wasn't inclusive. They just said this, the reports are given to communities, but they didn't even mention. So my key message is to make sure that in the SITREPs or the situation reports, they have to make sure their reports are inclusive so we know that people with disabilities are not left behind, because they're the ones that really marginalize in those times.
And that sounds like it's, you know, equally important in all countries that governments are paying attention to that and not assuming that if you just say, oh, like, we've given it to local communities or we've given resources to marginalized communities that disabled people actually will be catered for, because I guess we know that usually if they're not specifically mentioned, then they're not, right?
That's right.
As alluded to earlier, there's also a huge need for better data.
Make sure the assessment forms are inclusive for persons with disabilities. For example, using the Washington Group sets of questions.
The Washington Group set of questions are designed to gather disability disaggregated data. They ask about difficulties with seeing, hearing, mobility, communication, cognition, and self-care. And the difference that this data collection makes cannot be overestimated.
What we did during the DC Harold, because DC Harold hit the province where VDP office is in. So that's when we did the data validation activity. And at the end, we did an assessment. At the end, we found out that all our members, you know, receive the kinds of needs and the needs that they want. And everybody receives relief supplies from the government and even the partners in the ground.
Wow. So what you're saying is that with the better data, you were able to actually track within your province that the supplies were getting to people.
Yeah.
Next, we talk about evacuation centers and the detail of how to design them accessibly and keep them safe and ensure people's privacy is so important.
Make sure that all the evacuation centers are accessible and inclusive for people with disabilities. Because at the moment, most of our evacuation centers are built, like they're not built for evacuation center, but they're classrooms and also churches. Not only the ramps, because the practical changes that we saw is they do ramps, but they forgot that the person has to go inside the space in moving around, and also those who are blind, you know, or those who have low vision must have enough lights in the evacuation centers. And even the space for wheelchair users can move around inside. And to make sure that in the evacuation center, we need privacy. We need private rooms for people who have high support needs. And also to make sure that the washrooms are close to the evacuation centers.
With the experience that we had before, we found out that sometimes there's only one washroom, and all the men and women goes in one washroom, and it's risky for our women and even women with disabilities.
A content warning here that there's a brief discussion of sexual violence. If you'd like to skip that, then fast forward 1 minute and join us back.
And there's not enough lights too. Do the washroom, and sometimes there's some abuses. And I remember in 2018 we had this mass evacuation from the Ambai people, and they came there. There was like this rape case, and they said it's because the bathrooms are a long way and there's not enough lights. And I think one of the key messages is to make sure that those security guards or security people who are standing outside make sure there's inclusive women. Because sometimes they would blame that there's outsiders coming to rape the evacuees, but maybe the security is men who are, you know, standing outside. So make sure it's inclusive of women so they know what's going on outside.
So just to recap here, we need disaster policy and rapid response to be inclusive explicitly of people with disabilities. We need the disability disaggregated data. We need evacuation centers to be designed with accessibility and safety front of mind. The Committee on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities is currently drafting a general comment on persons with disabilities in situations of risk in humanitarian emergencies. And Nelly says that all of these considerations need to be taken into account in that general comment process as well. And finally, Nelly tells us why social welfare benefits are so important to making sure people with disabilities have their rights met during disasters.
Maybe a social welfare benefit for all members, because in these times, they're really discriminated in a way that maybe their homes are destroyed, and they've been living with their families, and now I believe that their families discriminated them in a way that maybe giving them food once a day, or even chasing them away from home. That's the experience that they have. And it's really important for these social welfare benefits, you know, to be in place so that our members during these times like this, they can pay for their own water, because now the water systems are no longer used, and people really need water to survive. And with these benefits, they can buy their own water, they can buy their own food, they can enjoy their rights as anyone else if the system is in place.
Exactly. Good policy means that people with disabilities have the same access to their rights as everyone else does. That is such a crucial point to finish with. Nelly, thank you so much for your time and insights.
Thank you so much, Aine.
Please help us spread the word about Enabling Commons. Share it with a friend or link to it in your organization's newsletter. With thanks to Rose Pequet for producing transcripts and podcast promotion. The music is composed and produced by Sam Morgan. Audio production and hosting is by me, Anya Kelly Costolo. To find out more about the intersections of disability and climate change, visit disabilityinclusiveclimate.org.